time for Culture Shocks with your host, Barry Lynn.
All right, and welcome to today's edition of Culture Shocks. This is Barry Lynn. Now, here's a saying: the more new evidence that develops, the more some people dig in to their erroneous earlier beliefs. The more new evidence that develops, the more some people dig into their erroneous earlier beliefs. Now, that is either a Chinese proverb, ancient, or it is something I dreamed up this morning in the shower. Either way, I am still flabbergasted by the notion that no matter what you show some people and say, well, this is why I believe what I believe, some people say, no, not enough, no, I'm unconvinced. What brings all this up, of course, is a recent announcement of the possible discovery of what some are calling the missing link. Now, opponents of evolution frequently say, well, we don't have any record of a half man, half monkey, so monkeys and humans are clearly not related. Well, that was kind of a stupid argument to begin with. Now the issue is compounded by the discovery of Ida, a 47-million-year-old fossilized skeleton of something which has been characterized as half monkey, half lemur, not half monkey, half human. We got to unpack all of this. The executive director of the National Center for Science Education is Dr. Eugenie Scott. She's been with us before. She's the author of the book Not in Our Classrooms. And Eugenie Scott, nice to have you back.
I'm delighted to be here, Barry.
Okay, look, I'm totally confused. I thought the missing link, first of all, was supposed to be a link between monkeys and humans. This is a lemur monkey link. But everybody, all the right-wingers in the country are already screaming bloody murder. This doesn't mean anything. What is this fossil?
This is a wonderful, wonderful fossil. It is probably the most complete primate fossil we have. It is not the eighth wonder of the world, as some of the hype from the publicity has surrounded it. But anybody who is interested in evolution just is swooning over the the wonderful completeness of this fossil. It is just great that we can find something like this. That said, it's not a missing link in the sense of tying humans directly to some sort of earlier form, but it's a wonderful transitional fossil that shows us very likely what the earliest primate on the branch of primates leading to monkeys, apes, and humans looked like.
So now a lemur is not a primate.
It's a primate. Primates can be thought of as having two major branches. The one more generalized branch leads to things like lemurs and galagos and bush babies and, you know, little varmints like that.
Uh-huh.
And the second main branch of the primates leads to monkeys, apes, and humans.
Okay.
Humans being a closest to apes.
Yes.
Arguably a kind of ape, but that's another talk we'll have. And this wonderful new fossil, which, by the way, since the discoverer is Norwegian, it's pronounced Ida.
Ida.
Not Ida, but it's spelled Ida, but it's pronounced Ida.
Actually, believe this or not, we actually have a guy from Norway who writes me every once in a while, who listens on the Internet, so I apologize to him specifically.
Well, the only reason I knew is not because of my my great-grandmother Ingebretsen, who came from Norway, but actually because I listened to the to an interview with the discoverer on the Internet. They have, as part of the hype for this fossil, they have a really quite wonderful website that has photographs and interviews and stuff like that. But Dr. Hurum, who is the the Norwegian paleontologist who discovered and arranged for the description, pronounced it Ida. It's named, of course, after his six-year-old daughter.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it's a great fossil, and it's a wonderful fossil in and of itself. It doesn't need to be hyped as the eighth wonder of the world, but annoying to scientists, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, someone at the press conference announcing this said it was somewhat like an asteroid falling down to Earth. That may have been a little hyperbole also.
One might say.
Yeah.
One might say.
Okay, so now here is this transitional fossil. Very important.
Which is a much better phrase to use than missing link, by
exactly.
the way.
Transitional fossils. You know, I would use that phrase, but people call everything missing links, and most people still think everything is missing. Now, describe this fossil. This fossil has nails, not claws.
Which is a primate characteristic, indeed.
And opposable big toes.
And actually opposable thumbs, too.
And opposable thumbs.
Mm-hmm.
Why
is
that significant?
It's significant because one of the basic primate adaptations is the grasping hand and grasping feet. Mm-hmm. The very earliest primates were thought to be arboreal forms. And arboreal means living in trees, so these were tree-climbing forms. And unlike squirrels, which are arboreal, and squirrels climb by digging their nails into bark and scrambling up trees that way, primates climb trees by wrapping their hands and feet around branches, and so it's a very different kind of locomotion. And it's another kind of interesting thing about evolution, that in the very early development of lineages, sometimes very small changes, like whether you grasp a limb as a tree-climbing creature or whether you dig your nails in, can further on in evolutionary history result in quite different. So squirrels live in trees, primates live in trees, but they're very different from us and have a very different adaptation. And the grasping hands that early primates have are very generalized, unspecialized kind of hand, which results in being able to do a lot of things with them, including not just grasping tree limbs when you climb, but also typing on keyboards and
exactly.
making stone tools and all other kinds of tools.
Yeah, I think, in fact, the tools probably came first. The keyboard came later, although some of the stuff that people write. I think they should have stuck the tools. Okay, now this was actually an interesting discovery because it was kind of hanging on a collector's wall in Germany like it was a picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now
there are a lot of fossils and vertebrate fossils, unfortunately, in private collections.
Okay, this guy initially wanted $1 million for it. I don't know what he got for it, but
we don't know.
Why would it take them, during the press conference, they said they spent 2 years working in secret about this. Why do you have to work in secret about something like a fossil? Because, of course, any secrecy leads people who do not accept the evidence of evolution into saying, I bet they just made it up.
Well, I don't know because I haven't talked with the I know the people who described it, but I've been traveling and I haven't, you know, they've
sure.
been busy too, and I haven't actually talked to them, and I haven't seen anything specific. But I can tell you a testable hypothesis, and that is that it's by the way, it's a very complete specimen. If you read the article on PLOS online. They did a lot of description of different parts, the hands, the wrists, the teeth, the skull, the backbone. I mean, just there's a lot of description in this fossil. It takes a long time to do that. And these are people living around the world, and so passing specimens around is, you know, I mean, it's going to take a long time to describe these. That wonderful fossil, Tiktaalik, the fishopod, the early land vertebrate.
I like him too.
That took 2-3 years to describe before they came up with it, and it wasn't really publicized. I mean, other scientists knew about it, but they didn't. You know, the general public didn't know that they were describing this fossil. My hypothesis about the secrecy with which even other scientists were not informed of the discovery of this fossil was that it had to do with the payment for it. As
mm-hmm.
you said, the asking
right.
price was a lot of money.
Yep.
And most museums, and I assure you, departments of paleontology don't have that cash lying around. I suspect that it was the company that ended up making the book, making the movie, selling the rights to or the showing rights to ABC and the History Channel.
Yep.
I suspect that the money came from the media.
Yep.
And it's going to be a much bigger story. It's going to be a much more, you're going to get much many more people tuning in. I will certainly be tuning
Absolutely.
In anyway, but many more people in the general public will be tuning in to watch this.
Indeed. Okay, when we come back, more with Dr. Eugenie Scott. She's the executive director of the National Center for Science Education. And when we come back, we're going to explore this fossil and also this persistent fear from people who don't like evolution. They don't believe anything. They don't include like Ida. We'll be back. back right here on Culture Shocks. We're talking this first half of the program about the new discovery of a 47-million-year-old fossilized skeleton of a kind of a combination lemur and monkey, kind of a branch of the chain that breaks out into lemurs and other varmints, and then that branch in the evolutionary ladder or tree or whatever we want to call it that branches out to humans eventually and monkeys and chimpanzees. Slightly before. Now, already the so-called religious right, the anti-science end of the religious right, is already saying a couple things about Ida, this fossil, formerly known as Ida, before you corrected me, Ida. And one thing is, look, it could be a fake. And they say, look, remember the Piltdown Man? This is a discovery of some early primitive, but it was all a fraud. We're opposed to this. It must be phony. How do we know it's not phony?
The nice thing about science is that it is self-correcting.
Mm-hmm.
The Piltdown forgery was a forgery. It was a fake fossil. And the people who discovered that were other scientists. It wasn't creationists who discovered that. It was other scientists who thought it looked fishy for a very, very long time. And then when it became possible to use some chemical tests on the two parts of the skull, it was found that this was a phony.
Yep.
If Ida is a fake, it'll become clear extremely quickly because other scientists are going to be looking at this. I think that is not a worry.
No,
number
that's
one,
good.
The people who are who have described it, the authors are skilled paleontologists. They're not likely to be fooled. And it's a two-part fossil, by the way. It was, as many fossils, a split left side, right side kind of fossil originally. One part of it was sold to one collector and the other part was sold to another collector. And actually, the one part of it has already been known in a museum. And the more complete half that was, as you described, hanging on a collector's wall and now belongs to the museum in Norway and has finally, you know, come to the light of science, that matches perfectly the other half. I mean, the probability that this is a fake is extremely low. It would have to be an extraordinarily complicated construction.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that out because it's already, you know, people are poo-pooing it. And in part, you know, the one thing that even you and I agreed with at the beginning of the program is that it may have been hyped just a tad bit much. But now, just to, again, we're not all scientists. I only occasionally act like one when I might have to be on the Fox News channel or something. But this lived 47 million years ago. Now, how do we know that? I mean, how can we be sure that it wasn't like 25 million?
There are well-established techniques using isotopes of atoms, radioactive variants of atoms that can be tested for their decay rates and procedures that have been used on many different substances, not just fossils, to gain an idea of how old any particular part of the planet is. And these fossils are dated because they lie underneath a volcanic layer. And volcanic layers are particularly good for dating because the isotopes that can be used are quite varied, but also because you get a nice calibration given the techniques that are used with volcanic strata. So we know that it is approximately 47 million years old.
Yeah, and who's counting after 46, really? But now, the difference is that the other primate fossil that people may have heard of is Lucy, discovered in Africa in the mid-70s, and that's only assumed to be about 3 million years old.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big gap.
Oh, yes. The new Ida fossil is not closely related to humans at all. It's
mm-hmm.
closely related to humans in the sense that it's more closely related than our giraffes and, you know, warthogs and deer and other mammals.
Right.
But because it's a primate, and we are a branch of the primate branch of mammals. But it is, it's not very closely related to Lucy at all. It's a very generalized arboreal a very generalized tree-leaving four-legged creature. And human beings, of course, are two-legged land-living,
yes.
ground-living people.
Yeah, unless we drink too much, in which case we act like we're on four legs, but that's another story. Well, now here's something. You know, it's so exciting. I mean, I looked at this and I thought, you know, it's got to be overhyped. You know, it's not like opening Al Capone's safe, but it's which was, of course, hyped and meaningless. This is hyped and actually meaningful. But what's so exciting to me as a layperson is, I mean, we even have some ideas about the way that Ida lived and possibly even died because she has a badly fractured left wrist. And that suggests to some that she couldn't climb as well and she might have fallen into a lake. This is amazing stuff.
You can tell a tremendous amount from the skeleton of a fossil. Back when I really was a scientist, as opposed to playing one on television, like you were saying earlier, I actually worked with bones and teeth, and that was my area of research in physical anthropology. And you can tell a great deal from a skeleton. You can tell things like fractures. You can tell things like disease states. You can tell things like growth. Did this creature have a, whether it's a human or any other creature that's whose skeleton you're studying, did this creature get good nutrition as an infant or as while it was growing? Because those kinds of tracks are left in the bones as well. But this even has impressions of soft parts. This fossil even has impressions of the fur and sort of the general body shape as well. And it even has remnants of stomach contents. We know what this little varmint ate. It ate fruits and nuts. They found seeds and they found indications of its diet. So bones can tell you a great deal, and when you get additional information, it's just gravy. It's really great.
Yeah, and it's so great, but you know, as we said at the beginning, no matter what you do, you're going to get, here's somebody responding to the Sky News report about this. The world was flat once. What a joke this is. And laws of physics still are ignored. Second law of entropy. I've heard it all now. Or looks like BS to me, honestly. I think its closest ancestors are Bigfoot and Nessie, maybe even the Chupacabra. What's wrong with people that they can't look at evidence and say, okay, I didn't see it before. I'm going to reevaluate based on what I do see.
You know, this is something that we can joke about because you just want to sort of smack your forehead with your hand and
yes,
say,
I
why
do
can't
that.
They? Yeah, I'm getting a flatter forehead myself. I'm looking much more Neanderthal since I've had this job. But when we were serious about this, I think that a real problem that anybody has is when you let your ideologies override the evidence. Mm-hmm. And this is not just I'm certainly not dissing religion or I'm not dissing any, you know, we live by our ideologies. We know that. Our ideologies shape how we interact with the world. And I mean, one of my ideologies is the ism is of environmentalism. Okay. But you have to be sure that you are clear eyed about ideologies.
That's right.
And that you recognize the empirical evidence for what it is.
Exactly. Perfect conclusion. Dr. Eugenie Scott, Executive Director of the National Center for Science Education, author of many things, including the book Not in Our Classrooms, Why Intelligent Design is Wrong for Our Schools. Thank you, Dr. Scott.
This edition of Culture Shocks has been produced by Diane Robinson, engineered by Dwayne Davis, and the Genesis Communication Network technical staff. Visit us online at cultureshocks.com.